Hi, I'm Darren Butler and welcome to episode 2 of our Leave Your Mark podcast series. Today we're in the beautiful surroundings of the Oasis of Peace in Cullen, County Louth, and I'm joined by Michael Murphy, an addiction counsellor and also a long-time advocate for Matt Talbot's canonisation. We will discuss Matt Talbot and how his story has reached many parts of the world, and we learn about the Matt Talbot Addiction Recovery Group here in Cullen and their plans for a new recovery cafe. And after the break, I'll be joined by Deacon John Taff, who is a spiritual and pastoral coordinator of the Apostles of Love community here in Cullen. We will discuss his experience of working with people in addiction and the effects on families. We'll explore how faith can play a part in recovery from addiction, and we'll learn about the Oasis of Peace Centre and how it came about. We'll also find out what is available for people to attend in person or online. Michael, in some ways, we are now in a very different age to when Matt Talbot struggled with his addiction. And at the same time, Ireland's relationship with alcohol remains the drug which causes the most deaths in Ireland. For many in the world, not just in Ireland, Matt Talbot's story has had a profound effect on many people struggling with an addiction. So if I could just ask you, first of all, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, as you said, my name is Michael and I'm an addiction counsellor, but I'm more than an addiction counsellor. I suppose I'm also involved with the Dublin Matt Talbot Diocesan Committee, and I'm also on the committee out here in the Oasis of Peace. I'm also a member of the CK32, the Knights of Columbanus here in Drogheda, which I'm luckily I'm blessed to be the Grand Knight now for the next 2 years going forward. So I'm involved in a lot of things, but my main thing is really trying to work with people that are struggling with addiction.
And you have been an advocate for canonisation of Matt Talbot. Could you give us a small reflection on Venerable Matt Talbot and how his story has reached many parts of the world? Because I know you've been very much involved in a lot of different parts of that.
Okay, to start with, just in case some of our listeners don't know who Matt Talbot is. Matt Talbot was born in the inner city in Dublin. He lived to the age of 69 and he died in 1925. But what makes Matt Talbot special was... Matt Talbot at the moment is venerable. He's, and for anyone that doesn't know, that's on the road to sainthood. You have to be made a servant of God first, and then you become venerable, and then you become blessed, and then eventually you're up into sainthood. But going back in the early days, Matt Talbot became so known out throughout the world was because he was an alcoholic who got his conversion through prayer, and he would have been a confirmed alcoholic at 16 years of age, would have started drinking at 12 years of age because he worked in a bottling plant and eventually moved on to then to the bonded warehouse where they would have been exporting whiskey and stuff like that. So he had access to alcohol from a very early age, and by the age of 16 he became a confirmed alcoholic. Matt Talbot then at the age of 28 was again in the inner city, and one day couldn't go to work because of his hangover, I suppose, and waited outside a pub called O'Mara's for all his friends to come from work. And he asked all his friends on the way in, could somebody post him a few bob so he'd go in and get some drink, and everybody walked past him. So on that particular time, he was just across from Newcomen Bridge, and I suppose when you read the life and times of Matt Talbot, they say he got a spiritual awakening when he went over to the bridge and he looked down at the river, at the canal, and he made this conscious decision that he was never going to drink again, that he was going to head home to his house, speak to his mother, and he headed off down to Clonliffe College to take the pledge. And he took the pledge for 3 months at the beginning because that's what they advised him to do. So the only way for him how not to go drinking with his pals was he had an inner circle of churches in Gardiner Street, Savile Row, Berkeley Court. These are the churches he would frequent, early mass going in the morning, and on the way home from work he would go to mass again on the way home. So that was really how he started off with his faith at the beginning. I suppose his notoriety has grown over the years that the present day, or the new saint, St. John Paul, he wrote a paper on him when he was doing his studies in the priesthood because he had heard about this man. And the present day Pope, Pope Francis, actually visited Sean McDermott Street on his last visit here to Ireland and venerated the relics of Matt Talbot. So Matt Talbot has been known throughout the church and throughout, I suppose, the world as somebody who would be an intercessor for somebody who was struggling with addiction. My involvement with Matt Talbot came really over 26 years ago. And really, it started with, I'm in recovery myself now, 26 years this September. And my first knowing of Matt Talbot really dates back to when I was 12 years of age in a little school in Leyton where I was born. And there was a priest out there, Father Tom O'Connor, who came to give us a talk on the life of Matt Talbot, because he was at that time back in the 60s, it was about taking the pledge for your confirmation, and that's where the where I would have first heard him. Now Matt Talbot would have went out of my life then again until 26 years later, or more, 40 years later I should say, when at the age of 39 I went into the Rutland Centre, which is a treatment centre for alcoholism, and in there I really struggled in there, and at the time I was asking to leave, and one of the evenings I went to leave anyway, and my wife had given me two books entering the treatment centre, and really one of them was the autobiography of Kenny Dalglish, because I'm an avid Liverpool fan as well, and the other one was the Diaries of St. Faustina, which I will be honest, at the time I never even opened the front cover. But on leaving that day, or leaving that evening, or threatening to leave, I was packing my bag to leave, and I swung the bag round, and the Divine Mercy book fell off the counter, and off the locker beside the bed. And out of it fell a little prayer card by Talbot. And for some reason, it was as if I, not saying I'm by location now or anything like that, but for some reason, I was transported back in my head to 12 years of age. And that story that I spoke about, Father Tom O'Connor coming in, that came clear to me about this Dublin man who had overcome his alcohol abuse through prayer. And really, I looked at him and I looked at the picture of him. And really, at that stage, I wasn't into my prayer life. And what happened was, I asked for his help that time. If I'm going to be staying here, you need to give me a bit of a hand with it. And that's how my journey with Matt Talbot started back then. I was at a Matt Talbot retreat day on Sunday in Sean McDermott Street, and it was run by the Matt Talbot Prayer Society. And I couldn't believe what I was sitting back in the audience, and Father Brian Lawless, which is the vice postulator for the cause of the canonisation of Matt Talbot, he opened his conversation by saying he was made vice postulator 16 years ago. And it type of struck me that I'm on this road 16 years now promoting the cause of Matt Talbot and looking at how Matt can influence modern day society. And I think, going back to what your question was, times were different then in Matt's time. When I suppose when we look at Matt Talbot's life back to the time he died at 69 years of age in 1925, he was, as I said, 69 years of age. But what people tend to forget is that he was, when he stopped drinking, he hadn't drank for 40 years. He was only 28. He was only a young man. The same as the struggles that's happening for this generation at the moment. It's young people that's getting caught up in addiction and alcoholism. And he is, he can be someone to look to for inspiration in that line. And of course, I think what we have to look at back then is also Matt Talbot at that time, 40 years prior to that, AA didn't come into Ireland until 1957 and wasn't founded until around that time. So he was really seeking to give up alcohol through the power of prayer rather than through counselling or have the benefits that I had with a treatment centre of that. But for some reason, over the course of his lifetime, he has been an inspiration to many people worldwide. And I think if you are actually just even Google the name Matt Talbot, you'll see many associations and organisations founded after him. You have the Matt Talbot Kitchen and Outreach Centres in America. You have the Matt Talbot Retreat Centres. You have in Australia, there's the same Matt Talbot Outreach. I know in Poland are very active. And here in Ireland at the moment, there's a whole sort of new surge in the process of Matt Talbot, in the sense where now there has been developed the Matt Talbot Prayer Society, which was a brainchild really of the Irish Bishops' Congress, which now involves the cathedral in Derry, the cathedral in Ennis, Armagh Cathedral, Sean McDermott Street. And what happens with them is on the first Monday of each month, they have a prayer service and a mass for anyone and the families who's suffering from addiction. So all the amount of prayer that goes on the first Monday of the month through the intercession of Matt Talbot now is countrywide. And I think also it's worth mentioning that I know I had involvement in Grace Ferry in Philadelphia, in South Philadelphia, that they now have the first American National Shrine to Matt Talbot. And they have that up and running now over 8 months. And a few weeks ago there, I met a lady who was, she's the vice president of the Caelic Society. And they have commissioned their own statue to Matt Talbot for this national shrine. And it's a life-size statue. And it's interesting that I had a meeting last week with the two priests in Holy Family here, Father Brendan and Father Stephen. And they are looking to put in a new Matt Talbot shrine in Holy Family Church in Ballsgrove. And I was visiting them last week and I brought them the statue because they're looking to commission the same life-size statue for the church in Ballsgrove. So there's lots of things happening around where Matt is very influential today, even though for him at the time it was completely different because it was alcohol was the drug of choice at the time and there was really no one seeking help, only through prayer, where today it's a bit different. But his influence is there today.
Okay, Michael, if I can just follow on from that, which your addiction counsellor had on, could you tell me of your experience of working with people with alcohol addiction? You mentioned there the difference between when Matt Talbot would have had his struggles to compare to today, but I suppose in some ways, you know, addiction is still the very same for many people. But just your own experience of working with people with addiction and even around the effects, the knock-on effects on families and that.
Okay, I suppose the difference today, and even when I was in recovery, when I went into recovery first in 1996, it was very specific. When you were in there, you would have an alcoholic, a drug addict, and a gambler, and maybe someone with sex addiction. But today, the guys are more complex in a sense where there's a lot of polydrug use and a lot of tablets, and we now have cocaine. So even in my time, going back to Matt's time, was one substance. Today, the addiction is polydrug use, where they have more than one substance or one activity. And I think that creates its own problems, because in some cases you can see the physical part of it, where you would see, obviously, with alcohol, wear and tear over the years and where that happens, and the same with heroin use and that. But the other process addictions that are not visible physically, you know, but there's all this emotional stuff with them. The seems to be, for my experience over the last number of years, is that it has become a more violent world around addiction, that there seems to be more aggression in it, and more, I don't know if that's because of the drugs that's been used or what, but there seems to be a whole organisation thing behind the drug use, and the addict is at the bottom of the pile, in a sense where he is the one with the addicted stuff, and he is the one with the family breakdown, he's the one with the mental health issues, he's the one that's and sometimes ends up dead, and that's the reality of it. But there's a whole other side to it, that it's an industry now for certain people. And the families where, even going back to my time, I can only speak in like with my own family, in a sense where they would have seen the hurt because me not being present and the daddy relationship with the children not being present. But today, families are dealing with a lot more intimidation and a lot more the knock-on effect than just seeing their loved one struggling is actually carrying now more into the family if there's money owed for drink or drugs, or certainly in the drugs world, that the intimidation process is a lot worse. The physical end of it is still the same, and the mental health issues are still the same. I worked in Tabor House in Navan. It's a secondary treatment centre. And really, when the guys appear there, when they come first, what you see is people lost, lonely and lost, that don't know where to turn. And that's the biggest thing I see. For the families, and I worked with families in Ballymun in the STAR project up there as a family support worker, their issues are completely different now because they're dealing with all the intimidation stuff, plus sometimes violence in the home from the alcoholic or the drug abuse. So their hurt has increased. They're not just worrying about their son or their husband or their daughter that has the addiction. They're working with the knock-on effect in the community that brings it to the home.
With the introduction of so many other drugs, as we said today, compared to years ago, do you feel that maybe alcohol is the forgotten drug, or you know, the fact that it's an illegal drug obviously makes it different to a lot of the illegal drugs? But would you feel that maybe the attention is off alcohol, so those struggling with that addiction is actually a weaker space in society where there's more help for others, or would there be a lot of help out there for those struggling with alcohol?
The help is still there, and I think alcohol is still the drug of choice. It's still the number one drug. But you're right on what you're saying, because of the poly drug use, and when guys present with cocaine use or tablet use or maybe the gambling, their psyche tells them, well, what are you saying? I'm not being there. Are you saying I can't have a drink? There's the emphasis on the alcohol is not as problematic as the other drugs are when they present to treatment centres, but yet it's still the lead-in drug to all the other drugs, if that's one way of wording it.
Yeah, like a gateway drug.
Like a gateway drug, yeah.
The Matt Talbot Recovery Group that meets here in the Oasis Peace in Cullen, could you tell us a little bit about that? Because I know it's a new initiative that's been brought here.
Yeah, we started up the Matt Talbot Spiritual Recovery Groups because back in 2014, I was asked to give a talk on the life of Matt Talbot at the Calex International Conference in Philadelphia. And when I went, I didn't really know much about what Calex was. And Calex is the Latin word for chalice. And Calex was something that was set up in the 60s, way back in New York. And it really came about from where there was Irish and Italian immigrants who would attend the AA meetings at the time. And they felt that they couldn't speak about Jesus as the higher power, because even back then that the meetings were becoming very circular. And if you look at the 12 steps, the second step always speaks about a God of our understanding. Now, if you come from a Catholic background, speaking about Jesus sometimes is frowned on. And we can see that in our own society today, where being Catholic is being like on the back foot. In other words, you know, we're not really allowed to openly to speak freely. Not unless we're in groups here, like we're in Oasis of Peace. So Calex was set up around that there would be a meeting, not in opposition to AA or NA or any of the other support groups, but it was like another support group for somebody with faith. So I looked at it and I said, maybe that could work here for us. So when I was back doing my studies to becoming an addiction counsellor, one of the things I looked at or done a little bit of research around was what happens to people when they come into recovery. They go to their AA, they go to their NA, they go to their treatment, they go to their aftercare, and they do really well for 12 months or maybe 18 months, and they stay clean and sober. But some of them are not happy. Some are still empty. Some are still lost. And really, it's the spiritual side of the program that some people weren't grasping. So I was speaking to John a number of years ago about how would we set something up. And we tried on more than one occasion. We looked at doing it in the parish centre in St. Mary's in Drogheda. Then we looked at Our Lady of Lourdes Church in Drogheda. And we could just never get it off the ground. But something happened when we came out here to the Oasis of Peace here in Cullen. It was the correct setting for something like that. So the group was set up, and what's happening is we explore the steps through the scriptures, and we openly come here. It's the third Saturday of every month, and really it's for people who's, yes, I probably have a handle on my addiction because of the supports I have, but my faith life is not there and I still feel a bit empty. And we use Matt Talbot as an example, because when you think of his time without the support groups. He didn't get up one morning and just decide, I'm going to go to Mass or I'm going to... He knew at that time the only way for him to stay safe and away from alcohol was to enter into the church and sit there. He didn't really know how to pray at the time. He would have known how to say an Our Father or maybe a Hail Mary. But he sat at the back of the church all the time in the early days. And really what he didn't understand was that God's graces were coming to him every time he sat there because he was present. And that's all he needed to do in the early days. And for us here, what I see for lads coming here, if they engage here, they will slowly come back to the faith and they'll feel that fulfillment. Because at the end of the day, what does any addict need? What's missing in their life is peace of mind. They don't have peace of mind. They can stop drinking, they can stop drugging, they can get their relationship back, they can get their work back, they can get everything back in all. But sometimes they're just not happy. And they're not happy because I believe, and my own belief is, that when God comes into your life and he's present and you build that relationship with him, you're fulfilled. And that's like the final piece of the jigsaw. And we look at Matt Talbot's life, where he became fulfilled over a period of time, over 40 years. Didn't happen when he stopped first. It happened near the end of his life. Last September, we had our first Matt Talbot retreat day here. Instead of rushing into it, we've been patient and we've been taking it only once a month. And the reason for that is because every addict that I've ever met or worked with over time, it's all about patience. It's all about slow. And when they come here, I know now lads that's come into this meeting here who have gone back to Sunday Mass. They've gone back to confession. And it's baby steps for them. We started out here and we only had a few local people coming to it. Now we've guys coming from Donegal. There's a man coming here this Saturday from Belfast for the first time. So they're coming now from all over the country here. So which tells me something is moving forward for them.
Okay, Michael, thank you very much for that. And just to say that we will have some links at the end of the podcast for people who would like to have more information about the Oasis of Peace and, of course, Matt Talbot Addiction Recovery Group. So, Michael, I'd just like to say thank you very much. I know you're going to join us at the end of the podcast again, but just for now, just to say thank you for your very personal story. And we really appreciate it and know how that can help many others. So once again, thank you.
Thanks, Darren.
And after the break, I'll be joined by Deacon John Taff, who is spiritual and pastoral coordinator of the Apostles of Love community here. We will discuss his experience of working with people in addiction and the effects on families. We'll explore how faith can play a part in recovery from addiction, and we'll learn about the Oasis of Peace Centre, how it came about, and we'll find out what is available for people to attend in person or online.
If you've been affected by any of the issues discussed in this episode, you can visit the Irish Bishops Drugs Initiative website at www.irishbishopsdrugsinitiative.ie. If you want to learn more about Matt Talbot and the Apostles of Love, you'll find links and contact information in the description.
I'm now joined by Deacon John Taff. John, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all.
So thanks, Darren. I'm married to Joan with three adult children. I'm a granda to two grandchildren. I worked in the HSE as an outreach worker for drugs and addiction from 1997. And then I went on to be an addiction counsellor with them for 17 years altogether. I left that and I went to work with the Irish Bishops Drugs Initiative, which you're in yourself, Darren, for 7 to 8 years. And after that, I suppose I'm here. I went back to be addiction counsellor again, and I got ordained in 2013. And I suppose we've set up this place, the Apostles of Love Ireland, the Oasis of Peace Centre here in 2 years ago, just before COVID started.
You mentioned before being ordained that you worked for many years, as you said, as an addiction counsellor and also with the Irish Bishops Drugs Initiative. And we've heard Michael talk about the devastating effects of alcohol. But the landscape of addiction has changed over the years with the introduction of so many sophisticated drugs. Could I ask you what addictions were people presenting with when you were in your counselling, and also today, here in the Oasis piece?
I suppose in the HSC, while I worked in Drogheda and Dundalk before that, I suppose people were coming with all different types of drug use. Everything from, you know, we at some stages we had young lads sniffing gases and fluids and lighter fluids and cannabis, and went on then cocaine and heroin use. I suppose we were part of the methadone program as well. So in my time with the HSC, all types of drugs were presenting. Again, I suppose a lot of, in the later years, I suppose a lot of tablets and mixing tablets was being used. And I suppose then, you know, I suppose over lately, just talking to some of my colleagues now, they would talk about, even during COVID, which I thought maybe drug use would have went down, they were talking about actually the amount of cocaine and crack cocaine that has come in as well. So all of them areas, which I know Michael spoke about there, but the complications, you know, the effects on the individual person and the effects on their families and the effects on society through, I suppose, over the later years, as Mike said, intimidation is a big one for families. But the individual person losing all sense of purpose in their lives. So many becoming depressed and suffering with mental health because of it. But also, you know, I think that void, Darren, that, you know, here, I suppose, even in my own faith journey, to see that void that's in people's life. People are using substance use for many reasons. But I often think of where St. Augustine said that our hearts are restless till they rest with our Creator, with God. And I think that void in everyone's life, in all of our lives, including mine for so many years, that void, that people fill that void with addictions in so many ways, and the impact it has on them, that they are searching for that joy and happiness and love in their lives, and they're searching in the wrong areas. But and I see that more and more now, Darren.
If we were to move to today now, John, and as you say, you're ordained a deacon, could you tell us where you've witnessed times where faith can play a part in recovery from addiction?
You know, there's no doubt about it that faith can play a major part in addiction. One, I suppose, because so many people in addiction, from the very guy that's standing on the street corner that might be, would say, begging, for them to be acknowledged even plays such a part. So many lads would have often said to me, you know, John, sometimes just people walk by me and ignore me, and I feel that I'm a nobody. So many people in addiction, their dignity, their respect, their belief in themselves disappears. And I think, you know, from a faith point of view, from all of us, if we're kind of trying to live out our Christian lives of treating everybody, to see Jesus, as Mother Teresa said, to see Jesus in everybody, it's to not just walk by them people, it's to acknowledge them, maybe say hello to them, maybe talk to them, maybe help them in some way. First of all, that's fate. That's a living fate. Then I suppose I see that if people put their belief, like as Michael said here, which we're trying to do, if they find God to fill that void that I spoke about, only God can fill that void. And when God pours out his love upon someone's heart, then people will find freedom. And that's a huge thing. Again, for someone to find that freedom from addiction, we do a program here called Unbound, which is called Freedom in Christ. And many people get freedom. And so faith, there's many, many ways. Prayer. When someone finds prayer, they get solace, they get strength to be able to fight their addictions. Even, you know, I think from a faith point of view, Darren, to give someone a sense of belonging. That, you know, the people that are welcomed, they feel, you know, even at times, I mean, just to be welcomed and not to be treated, not to be judged because of their addiction, but be judged for the person that they are, the human person they are, with their gifts, because they also, God has given them gifts. So I suppose many, many ways faith can be the answer that so many people seek.
And like I said, we are in this very peaceful setting here in the Oasis of Peace. Could you tell us the history of the Oasis of Peace?
You know, it's a very interesting, I suppose, this place. We go back, I suppose, 13 years ago. 13 years ago, I suppose, it would have been put on myself and a colleague, Pat, Deacon Pat, put on our hearts to set up a place for families, set up a place for those people that are broken and hurt and are on the margins, set up a place where people can come to know the love of God. So we really wanted to set up a place where we go back to the basics of the Catholic and Christian faith, of treating people with love, you know, just welcome people and bringing them on to try to encounter Christ, to teach them around their understanding of their faith, and also to bring healing into their lives, again, through faith. So I suppose it was put on our hearts 13 years ago, just before COVID, at the start of COVID, we had approached here the monastery here in Mellifont Abbey and asked them, told them our plan. Everything here, where you're sitting out there in this centre, is all God's work and God's providence, because we were given the place and we were told, look, you have to do it up. And everything that came, I mean, there's been over 250,000 spent on this, and we never asked anyone for a penny. And people came forward to do all the work. And it's miraculous, but it's also when God wants something to happen, it will happen. So we kind of got this place, and during COVID, we were seeing people every day. There was many people, I suppose, with the gifts and the talents and the charisms that people have that are involved. You know, we can see where even my own experience and Mike's experience around counselling and other people's experience, we could see people for maybe pastoral counselling. We could see people for listening, to listen to them and to just be there for them. So right during COVID, people were arriving every day, suffering with anxieties and mental health and depressions and addictions and all of these areas. They came and just to be listened and to be welcome for a cup of tea and a scone, or just to have a place to come. So that's how it's kind of started, Darren. But since then, we've all kind of a team. We've a team of over 30 volunteers that are part of the team. They all have different gifts, and they use them gifts here to reach out to people and to welcome people. And we have a whole program every day of different things happening here. Everything from someone coming just to learn about their faith, or to come on retreat, or to come to get, would say, freedom through the Unbound, or to be prayed with for healing, or to a prayer group, or to, if someone is separated or divorced, we have a group called Beloved that we started for that. So there's so many different areas that we have here. And we just want to, again, bring God's love to everybody and let them encounter God, and I suppose then send them back to their own communities and their own parishes. And it has been such a blessing for all of us involved to see God at work.
It just sounds like it's for everybody on their journey in their faith, from those who are at the very start to those who are seeking more.
And, you know, that's exactly what we wanted. We wanted from the very person that's broken. For instance, a couple of weeks ago, you know, I came over in the morning. There was a guy outside, and I asked him, was he okay? And he was looking into space, and he said, look, he said, I left my house with a rope in my pocket to take my life. And he says, I've walked to pick the place to do it. And he said, this looked like a beautiful area. And he said, now, he said, I see the Oasis of Peace, and I wondered what it is. He came in, and it's not by chance that God sent him here. He was never here before in his life, never knew about it. But we spent a couple of hours here with him and put a plan in place to keep him safe. And the guy is just, you know, he has since come plenty of times, and, you know, the difference in him. And I just, again, from someone like that to someone that maybe has been away from their faith for a long time, to just to come and to encounter God in different ways. It could be encountering God in his creation, which we have beautiful forests. And as you see around here, we've beautiful surroundings. We have, you know, silent prayer here, that people can find time to get away from the hustle and bustle to the silence. Or maybe they can come and do a course with us or a retreat with us. We do kind of our ladies' retreats here. We do Matt Talbot retreats. We do lots of different kind of events here every day. And I suppose you're right. It's to bring people to that stage where they maybe where meet them where they're at, because we know that God loves everyone where they're at, but he wants to bring us all into a new relationship with him. He wants to bring us closer to him, and we try doing that in whatever way we can, and that's many, many variety of ways.
And I suppose the next question leading on from that would be, how can people reach out and see what events are on? Is there social media? Is there websites available?
Pat, Deacon Pat, who's here, is he looks after some of the social media, but we know we have a lot to do. We know we have a lot to do. I suppose our greatest way of promoting is by word of mouth, because we have so many people coming here, you know, really every day. Bar Wednesday is probably our quietest day, but every other day of the week we have many events on and people come through word of mouth. But we are on, we have our website, which is www.apostlesoflove.ie, or we're on, you can Google Apostles of Love Ireland, because I suppose we started through Our Lady in Medjugorje when we were away on pilgrimage. Our Lady's messages were saying, "Be my apostles of love." So we wanted to be apostles of love. We wanted to start at the basis of love, and the centre being Oasis of Peace. There is a centre in Medjugorje called Oasis of Peace. But our difference is we wanted people to come here and go away with an oasis of peace in their heart. So that's why we call the centre Oasis of Peace. And we hope that we can do that. We can bring people on the journey, that there's something for everyone here, and they can go away maybe refreshed, renewed. There's lots of parishes come here on retreats. They bring people from their parish. We had the Catholic African community here on Saturday for a retreat. We had a youth group here on Friday for a retreat. So we put on retreats, or we allow people to do their own retreats. So we have many different things. So you can look us up on Facebook under Apostles of Love Ireland. We're on YouTube under Apostles of Love Ireland as well.
Great. So I'll just conclude with thanking both John and Michael and all the volunteers here at the Oasis of Peace for making us so welcome for the recording. And if I can just finish maybe just one question for both of you. And John, if you could dare to dream, what would your hope be for the future of those struggling with addiction?
There is a big one. You know, we just think, I mean, you know, there is no easy answer, Darren. There's no easy answer. I think more and more we've lived with it all our lives in society. It's always going to be there. One, I think that people in addiction themselves. One, that they need a variety of, I always think that they need a variety of supports available. They need to be able to, here in Ireland, one of the things I struggled with is that there wasn't enough treatment beds. When someone wants maybe to get treatment, they can't get that treatment when they want it because there's not enough beds out there. But outside of that, that's one area. It needs funding put into it on a national basis, both for those that use and also family members. But also from our point of view, that also not to forget, you know, even in the health service, you're allowed to talk about spirituality, but you're not allowed to talk about maybe your faith as regards maybe the Catholic faith. But yet, if we look back through all of our history here in Ireland, the Catholic faith were the only people that were providing the treatment for people in addictions. And I don't think it should be overlooked. I think that even for Coomwira and all of these areas, they need to be looked at, as that faith can play such a difference. Research shows that people that have a faith or have a belief system is much more positive the results in getting clean from addictions. So I think there should be more research put into it. It should be supported more. And I suppose from our point of view, we'd love to be able to be a light. From my point of view, even here in the Oasis of Peace, that those that in addictions that will come here, that they will see the light again in their eyes, will see the gift that they are, and that they can use that gift And maybe that will have a knock-on effect to those in our local communities to get sober or to get clean from drugs and to get a new life of freedom back through the help of Christ.
Great. Thank you very much for that, John.
Thank you, Darren.
And the same question to you, Michael, just to finish off. If you could dare to dream, what would your hope be for the future for those struggling with addiction?
I suppose, Darren, when I'm listening to the way the word, the question is phrased, I'm thinking of those, so I'm thinking of the individual, rather than what can be done for the whole addiction services and that. I suppose for the individual I'm thinking of, and coming from, I'm still in recovery from addiction myself, I think it's peace of mind. It's something that the addict never has, never had, and always seek that void, as John spoke about there. Always searching and searching in the wrong places. And I think when you're in recovery and you're coming away from drinks or drugs, you're all the time looking for something. And it's only when you find Jesus and you find the love of Jesus that you feel fulfilled, because you never do feel fulfilled. And my hope for any of the addicts or alcoholics, that they find that fulfillment that they have, because when you get that fulfillment, self-worth comes with it, self-esteem comes with it, and you become the person that God always wanted you to be. I'll always remember a lady in Ballymun who had two sons who died from heroin overdose, and the third son was in Mountjoy, and she asked me a question one day, Michael, how do you work with people like my sons? Because there's times as a parent, and the trouble they brought, I wished them dead. And that was a very strong statement for a mother to say. And I'll always remember asking her in a way that when we were born and we were baptised, that flame was put into us and the Holy Spirit came upon us through our confirmation in heaven. And we kicked ball and we played games and we dreamed of what we wanted to be. A footballer, a fireman, ever what it was at the time. And that flame got bigger and bigger and bigger. Then all of a sudden, drink and drugs came in. And that could have come in through something that happened in our lives, trauma or something like that. And all it ever done was drink and drugs and addiction, all it ever done was smother that flame of belief, that flame of desire, of wanting to be something else. It never goes out. And I was explaining this to this lady, that sometimes I feel when I'm in a room with somebody who's struggling, I'm like the blacksmith with the bellows. I'm constantly pumping to get that spark back into a flame of life again. And that's what I would wish for any addict, that flame would burn inside them. And that flame today we know is the love of God, is that relationship to have with God that brings them forward and out of this darkness that they're in, to the person that God wanted them to be. And if I'll finish with Darren, it's just a little prayer that, believe it or not, is one of your own books, and it stuck with me for an awful long time. It said, life is like a voyage on the sea of history, often dark and stormy, a voyage which we want for the stars that indicate the route. The true stars of our life are the people who have lived good lives. They are the lights of hope. Certainly Jesus Christ is the true light. The sun has risen above all the shadow of history. But to reach him, we also need lights close by. People who shine with his light and so guide us along our way. And certainly Matt Talbot is one of those lights.
Okay, great. Thank you for that, Michael. And just once again, thanks to John and Michael for joining us today. Thank you for listening. If you found this podcast interesting, please tell others and please subscribe.
If you've been affected by any of the issues discussed in this episode, or if you want to learn more about the Apostles of Love, you'll find links and contact information in the description. This episode was presented by Darren Butler of the Irish Bishop's Drugs Initiative. It was produced by Darren Butler, Mark G. Byrne and Lisa Murray. The sound engineer was Mark G. Byrne. Please subscribe to be notified about new episodes.